I'm Craig Wilson.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 76 for Friday, 25th of January, 2013.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we talk Apple, and more specifically, its plummeting share price.
And as always, we also pick our biggest winner and our biggest loser this week, and Craig and I will pick our product or app of the week. We'll be back right after these commercial messages.
Shoo, Mr. Henderson, your desktop is dirty. Dirty desktop, dirty mind, isn't it? Shame, let me clean here. Clean up, click. Wipe hard drive, click. Ach, now that's better.
Don't get ambushed. Call for backup. Get Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom, your off-site hosted backup solution. Store and save all of your data online and in real time for half the price of an on-site server. Recovery Vault from Vox Telecom. Backup for your business. SMS 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Craig?
Yeah, it's good. Thanks to you, Duncan.
Good. Thanks very much. Yeah. There's big news internationally this week has been Apple's plummeting share price. What's going on?
And it's just fallen drastically, hasn't it? To the extent that, you know, some people are saying perhaps it's even oversold now.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely looking oversold at these levels. If you look at some of the fundamentals behind the share price, I'm not a stock market trader, but look at one of the basic metrics, the price earnings multiple, and it's right. Trading at levels below IBM and Microsoft, which are much lower growing companies.
Indeed.
Historically anyway. It's trading at a PE multiple of 10, which is the lowest I think I've ever seen Apple trade at, certainly in the last 10 or 12 years since Steve Jobs returned to the company. And it's almost defying expectations now. It peaked in mid-September 2012 at over $700 a share. And amusingly now, if you look back at some of the articles that were written at the time, all the analysts saying, this is going to be the first $1 trillion company.
Indeed, the share price of it going to $1,000 and this sort of thing.
The share price will be $1,000 before the end of the year, and we're all going to get rich from this company. And then something strange happened. It started falling and falling and falling. And it's been falling for 4 months now, to the extent that it's lost almost 40% of its value. Its market capitalization has fallen from around $660 billion to what's the figure now? I think it's around $400 billion, just over $400 billion market cap. I mean, it's still big.
And we're seeing amazing figures, too, of sort of the value of companies or the GDP of different countries that the loss in the last sort of 2 weeks alone represents.
Yeah, there's some great stats out there. I mean, the one I posted to Twitter this morning was that the loss in market value of Apple over the last 4 months is greater than the total market value of Microsoft.
It's just phenomenal. But what we also forget is, as you said, they missed some of the targets. So they didn't sell the 50 million iPhone 5s that investors had hoped for. But they did sell 47.5 million iPhones.
Yes.
They are still moving product hand over fist, even if it's not quite at the stratospheric rate that people were hoping to see.
Yeah, I think there's this growing concern that Apple's not going to keep up this growth momentum, especially in light of the fact that they haven't brought out any compelling new products recently.
Well, that's the big thing, right? We haven't seen a new product really in years. We've seen reworked products, you know, we've seen the iPad mini and so on, but we haven't seen anything really brand new since the iPad. And I think this is really the exciting space to watch, is what is the next product that Apple's going to bring out, because they have to bring out something new and they have to do it soon.
Yeah, well, Tim Cook, the CEO, hinted that there was a strong product pipeline coming this year. They haven't given away any detail yet. Obviously, there's been all the speculation about an Apple TV. I'm still not sure that makes sense given the low margins in the TV business, but maybe Apple can figure it out if they get the content play around it correct.
And also the pricing. You know, you've got to wonder how many people would be able to afford an Apple TV. If you look at things like their cinema displays and this sort of thing, they're really, really elite computer equipment.
If they charge the same as for a TV, if they sort of use the cinema display pricing as the sort of pricing they attach to a TV, if assuming they do a TV product, then I think it'll fail.
Sure, I mean, you know, how many people could possibly really buy a $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 TV? It's just not that likely. But there are also rumors about things like watches. This is something we've been looking at lately. Perhaps a smart watch from Apple, that might make quite a lot more sense, especially given their experience with things like the iPod Nano. They've already got all of the sort of constituent parts. They're pretty good at those. They just need to put it all together into one package. I think I'd certainly find that a compelling product if they were to go that route.
Well, there were some hints, I think, this week that Apple is looking at wearable computing as an area of focus. So we may indeed see some activity there. But y'all know the share price has really come under pressure, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. It's almost at its year low now. If it falls much further, it's actually going to go into negative territory year on year, which is something we haven't seen from Apple for a long time. It's an interesting situation, and I think this is putting a lot of pressure on Tim Cook. I think there's a lot of skepticism out there as to whether Apple can continue the momentum it had under Steve Jobs. And I had an interesting conversation with our friend Arthur Goldstuck this week from Worldwide Works. He made some really interesting points. His view is that Apple has lost the innovative edge since Steve Jobs died, and he also thinks the company has become a follower and that the market has noticed this, particularly with the iPad Mini.
Absolutely, having to respond to the 7-inch tablets of competitors, even though it wouldn't.
Which was a reactionary move to the Google Nexus tablet and to the Amazon tablet. The iPhone 5, I think, being a disappointment. It's not as innovative. It doesn't take the. It's a great product, but it doesn't take the. It doesn't have that innovative leap that perhaps the product needed.
It's no iPhone 4. There's no sort of envelope being pushed. It's really much of the. It's the sort of evolution versus revolution problem.
It's like the iPhone. It's really like an iPhone 4S Part 2.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. It was. It's in perhaps the device that should have come out instead of the 4S.
Yes.
You know, that was. Had it come out then, it would have certainly been more innovative. But now it really does seem incremental at best. And you know, when we look at what some of the Android devices are offering, it just feels dated. It just feels like it's fallen behind. It's part of an old product cycle that was amazing at the time, but just simply isn't anymore.
Yeah.
Still, at the same time, Apple is going to continue selling tons of product. And, you know, we've seen things like they sold 2 million devices in China on opening weekend.
Well, people make that assumption, but, you know, let's play devil's advocate here. I mean, Samsung is really coming along in great guns. With the most anticipated smartphone this year is not the iPhone 6, it's the Samsung Galaxy S4.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that product has sold more than 40 million units already. The
S3, that is, yeah.
You know, if one of these companies, be it Samsung or someone else, comes out with a product that is noticeably far ahead of what Apple is offering with the iPhone, and if Apple isn't able to innovate with the next iteration of the iPhone due out later this year, then don't be surprised if Apple sales fall off a cliff. And I think that may be what investors are worrying about now. They're sort of starting to price in Apple for a worst case scenario. Certainly, if you look at the price earnings multiple, I think they're pricing in Apple for a sharp earnings fall this year.
And certainly, the Samsung, the Galaxy S3 is great proof that if you build a better product, people will come and buy it. You know, just anecdotally, I know a lot of iPhone users who've moved to the Galaxy S3 now.
Yeah.
And you know, consumers are fickle, particularly as consumers have become increasingly savvy over the years. It used to be, I'll buy Apple because, well, I don't need to know that much, but, you know, I just know it's a good product. And consumers are a lot more savvy now, and they read a lot more, and I think they're a lot more interested before they make these sort of enormous purchases. Won't go on brand loyalty alone anymore. Yeah.
We need to see a step up in innovation at Apple. Certainly iOS has become tired, I think.
Undoubtedly.
I think Jelly Bean, certainly from Google, has overtaken iOS in many respects, certainly in terms of the interactivity of the interface, and also some of the features included, such as the Google Now application, which I use all the time. I think it's fantastic.
Indeed, that tie-in with Google is one of its greatest attributes, I think, and one of its greatest assets. You know, I found I'm an iPhone user at the moment, and my iPhone, I barely use any of the native applications anymore. All of the applications I use for my core things are Google apps. Really, I'm running Google products on an Apple device. And this is one of the bonuses of Android, is obviously that integration is just that much more seamless.
Yeah. So in terms of Google and Apple, the things to watch, and Samsung obviously, is the S3 and whatever we see from HTC to replace the One X and the One X Plus. We should see all those products coming in the first 6 months of this year. Of course, Apple, the first big announcement everyone is expecting is the new iPad, the iPad version 4. I think we need to see some innovation there. I can't imagine what Apple's going to do to improve this product in such a short period of time since they brought out the third generation version.
You can bet it won't be a USB port though.
No. And we need to see innovation around iOS. I think the Apple share price has been oversold a little at the moment. If I had a big wad of cash floating around, I'd probably dump some money into Apple stock for a few months, because I think it's going to bounce up a good 15-20%, perhaps more, over the next few months, because I think this is overdone. I think there's perhaps a bit of a herd mentality, herd follow the sheep sort of mentality going on around Apple at the moment. There's no doubt that the company is facing challenges, and And I think perhaps the market has woken up to the fact that this company isn't a one-way bet straight up.
No, indeed.
Good. Craig, you broke an interesting story yesterday about a company called Tencent. They're a very large Hong Kong or Shenzhen. I don't think they're Hong Kong. I think they're Shenzhen-based company, Chinese company, that is 35% held by South Africa's media group Naspers. They operate the biggest instant messaging communication internet platform in China, a system called QQ. They're a big e-commerce hub, and they're involved in all sorts of other areas.
And they're also involved in a microblogging platform, sort of vaguely reminiscent of Twitter. They're just one of China's huge internet companies. But
the interesting angle, of course, is that they're owned by Naspers. And they also own this thing called WeChat. Tell us a bit about that and why it's relevant to us here.
That's right. So WeChat was launched almost 2 years ago now in China under a slightly different name and then rebranded as WeChat. And really, it's their go at the likes of WhatsApp. It's a cross-platform instant messaging service that includes the ability to send videos and text, images, your location, share contacts, really all of the functionality you see in products like WhatsApp. And then a couple more as well. There's the inclusion of video calling sort of a la Skype, although in our sort of testing here in the office, we had trouble getting it to work, but there's certainly plans to incorporate it. And what's interesting too, of course, is that this is now available in the Play and Android stores, but also in the OV store for Nokia devices, including Symbian devices, which are some of their older devices, and also for Windows Phone 8 and for BlackBerry. So what you've got is this very, very multi-platform, very strong competitor in terms of functionality to something like WhatsApp, and has a slight edge over WhatsApp, not only in terms of the video calling, but in the fact that it's free at the moment and ad-free. It's available now, and you and I fiddled with it a little bit earlier this week. It's not quite as slick yet as the likes of WhatsApp. I still think it's a little bit clunky, but
it does more than WhatsApp.
But it does more, and it's certainly a very aggressive play. And we got wind that a local gent named Brett Loebscher, who some in the tech industry will doubtless know, who's worked for Samsung previously and worked for a company called Blazing Chili, has been appointed to try and grow WeChat in this market, and more interestingly, in the African market generally. I think we're going to see an aggressive play from them in months to come, and they're really going to try and target South African users of smartphones to pick up and use the service. Of course, we have to see whether they have success with it. So Samsung has got their own chat service too, called Chat On.
Oh, that's terrible.
I mean, right, we've seen other people try and do it, and really, as the lesson for any of these sorts of apps or for social media services is, it's really, you've got to get people where their friends are. You know, if you can convince enough sort of early adopters to pick up a service, then others will do so.
But clearly, opportunities being in emerging markets, and QQ has been hugely popular in China, obviously, and I'm sure there's interconnectivity between these platforms, although I haven't checked that. It's been launched they really are going after emerging markets. Craig, you mentioned they've opened up, or they're targeting India as a big market.
Indeed, and they claim more than 300 million users of the service already.
300 million active users.
Which is just staggering. If you give something like, I know we keep coming to WhatsApp, but this is perhaps one of the best sort of competitors or the closest rivals. You know, WhatsApp mentioned that there were 18 billion messages sent and received on New Year's Eve, but 300 million users is a fairly substantial number, even compared to that.
Yeah, no, it's a big number, and the interesting aspect of this, of course, is with Naspers pushing this into the South African market, is they're going to take on Mixit, in which they once held a stake.
Indeed, and they sort of relinquished that stake a year and a half ago, and it's very interesting to see them moving back into that space now. I spoke to Vincent Mayer at Mixit yesterday about this, and he was very upbeat and said things about this sort of promoting competition and so on. But you have to wonder what they're thinking at the Mixit offices behind closed doors about this move.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what Naspers is thinking is here as well, because I mean they had Mixit, which was really dominant in the South African market. Why sell that and then come back with this product?
There is also the argument that this product is more this is more aimed at smartphone users.
Is it? Because it also supports Symbian devices, and it supports BlackBerry and all the rest of it.
I suppose it seems though, in terms of all of the high end functionality, the video and the voice and so on, I feel like it's more of a more of a blatantly smartphone product, going on the idea that cheap smartphones are going to become more more and more ubiquitous, okay. And perhaps moving away from the feature phones, which some people also argue is the potential downfall of Mixit if it can't adapt quickly enough, because eventually we're going to have Mixit's target market not necessarily on feature phones anymore, but on budget smartphones.
Yes. Well, I've noticed that Mixit has been quite aggressively pushing out Android updates for the service. I must admit, I don't personally use Mixit, but they certainly seem to have been quite aggressive in keeping Android up to date. So, again, innovating around Android. So they do seem to have that as a big focus area. Anyway, we could see the big battle between WeChat and Mixit over the next while, particularly if Naspers really does decide to get aggressive with its expansion of this product in the South African and African markets.
Indeed, as one analyst said to me, they've certainly got the technology chops and they've certainly got deep enough pockets.
Tencent does, for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Great. Well, more disaster at our favorite government department. Well, actually, talking to guys in the industry, they say it won't make the slightest bit of difference. The resignation, well, not the resignation, but the placing on what they're terming special leave.
Feels like it needs big inverted commas around it. Suspension.
It's a suspension, really, of Rosie Sikhese, the Director General. Just chatting to people in the industry about the impact of this, very cynical sort of views, it won't make any difference at all.
Indeed,
what did she actually achieve?
Not terribly highly regarded, unfortunately.
No. And unfortunately, there don't seem to be too many people in that department generally who are well regarded.
No.
Particularly at the ministerial level. What can we say?
More drama, really.
Yeah. I mean, is it going to have an impact on DTT? Digital terrestrial television, DTT is already so delayed. Will this have any impact?
And there are already so many further hiccups that we know are going to crop up in months to come.
But it's just such a bizarre story about whether or not she signed her performance agreement and then the minister having signed one version of it and her having signed another version of it, and then allegations that she lied to Parliament, and then Parliament telling the minister that she needs to deal with the situation, and some MP suggesting that she's broken the law. And
but I mean, it's reminiscent of a sort of playground spat and confusion as opposed to the kind of ongoings you expect from a government department.
It's actually pathetic. As one person put it to me who is reasonably close to that department, said to me the other day, the best thing that can happen to the Department of Communications is if the minister gets fired, the DG gets fired, the entire department gets cleaned out and replaced with new management. The only thing that can save this thing and start to deal with the disasters that we're facing in the sector.
And it's unfortunate because, of course, every time there is a change of leadership, there are inevitable further delays as the new leadership comes to grips with the portfolio. But
That keeps happening. But
it also doesn't help if the current leadership isn't achieving anything.
I mean, DTT has been delayed. We've got the minister appealing the ETV decision, which probably means we're going to miss the ITU decision, which means we're not going to free up the spectrum that's needed by the operators to roll out broadband, especially into more rural areas, which has a direct and measurable economic impact running into tens of billions of US dollars.
And more superficially, is also just embarrassing, frankly, for what's meant to be the ICT leader of the continent.
Yes.
We're going to see at least half a dozen other countries turn off their analog broadcasts long before we are.
It's just
shameful.
It is a direct impact on South Africa's economy and is harming our growth, and it's completely unacceptable that this department is as dysfunctional as it is. And I'm getting quite heads up here, but the fact that this dysfunction is allowed to continue is an indictment, and it's continued for too long. Unfortunately, I don't see a change happening.
No, indeed. No. And unfortunately, I mean, communications needs to be a priority portfolio, as you said. The economic benefits of treating it seriously are very, very direct and tangible.
Absolutely. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox.
Well, let's talk this week, shall we, about this week's winner and loser. One of these is sort of tied to just the sort of thing we were talking about. The winner this week is Kenya, I believe.
Kenya, yeah. Well, I think it was quite instructive, some of the comments we saw coming out of Eric Schmidt, the chairman of Google, over the last week. He's just conducted a four or five-nation tour of Africa, which interestingly excluded South Africa. His main port of call was Nairobi, where he visited the iHub Innovation Hub up there and traveled to other various parts of Africa, including South Sudan, interestingly enough. He seems
Chad,
to have a...
Chad, curiously.
Chad, yeah. It's not exactly... what's the phrase, a beacon of democracy, if you like.
Or a ICT or anything, really. Yeah.
But he did seem to do this straight from a trip to North Korea, so I'm not quite sure what Eric Schmidt is trying to achieve through these visits. But certainly Kenya, he made some interesting comments saying that Nairobi in particular could be the tech leader for Africa in future, and that he's really impressed with what he's seeing up there. I think that's a function of a whole lot of things, but... certainly one among them, I think, is the competition we're seeing up in that market, and also a smart minister and a smart regulator.
I was going to say, that's what we're seeing too, is a sort of regulatory and leadership environment that facilitates this sort of thing.
Interestingly enough, there was all that controversy recently about the UN possibly taking over management of the internet domain system from ICANN. Interestingly enough, I mean, that whole thing got shot down, but interestingly enough, the Nigerian Minister of Telecommunications, I'm not quite sure of his correct title, was the only African minister in that portfolio to vote against it.
That's fascinating.
So there we go, Kenya, our winner of the week. Craig, we really must get up there and do some coverage of that market, because it really does sound like there is a lot of activity. I mean, we saw that, we've seen that investment, and I'm a little skeptical about it, but we've seen that investment going into the planned investment into that new tech city. What's it called again?
I'm trying to remember the...
It's just south of Nairobi. They're planning to...
Something along these lines. Billions of dollars being sunk into it and built from the ground
up. We'll see if it happens. I mean, it could just be a pipe dream, but there's a lot of talk about investment, so... Yeah, let's keep an eye on Kenya. And our loser this week, just related to the discussion we were having at the beginning of the show, I think it has to be Apple.
Absolutely.
The share price has really taken a smack. And as we said earlier in the show, we're really going to be watching this company with a great deal of interest this year.
Oh, and perhaps sobering. You know, it can't go up forever. And perhaps this is the correction that's been needed. And at the same time, hopefully this will mean we see some really, really interesting products in the rest of the year. I'm certainly hoping so.
Craig, let's do our Apple product of the week. We've actually got two apps this week. Do you want to kick off with yours?
Sure. Mine is absolutely ridiculous, but I think that's part of the charm of apps and some of the fun. My app is called GIF Boom. And that's GIF Boom. Interface looks quite a lot like Instagram, so it'll be familiar to anyone who's used that image sharing service. And as the name suggests, it's an app for creating GIFs. These are, as you no doubt know, you may have seen some around the internet becoming particularly popular on Tumblr these days. It's normally a string of a few images sort of stitched together to make a short animation or sort of video. And GIF Boom allows you to do exactly that. You can take up to 30 shots, either automatically or you can do it manually one by one. Then pick the shots you want to include, set the sort of speed at which they'll loop, and share it. You can also slap some filters on it in the same way you could with Instagram if you want to. People can follow one another and like each other's GIF Booms. They can also re-boom any of the GIFs they particularly like. And,
this sounds like the World Wide Web circa 1993.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I've already seen plenty of cat GIFs doing the rounds. It's terribly silly, but it's also great fun. It's free. It's available in the Play Store for Android devices or in the Apple Store for iOS devices. And frankly, it's a hoot. But as with all of these sorts of things, it's down to the quality of the GIFs made by the people you follow, I think. I seem to have a particularly large number of silly friends who are delighting in using it. And it's giving me a great, great pleasure.
Good. Good. It actually reminds me of an animated GIF I saw on the internet a couple of weeks ago, just after CES, where Steve Ballmer of Microsoft did that cameo yes. appearance at the Qualcomm keynote in Las Vegas. It was fascinating. If I can find it, I'll put it on this post. But a hilarious picture. I mean, Steve Ballmer is made for animated GIFs.
Yes,
dancing onto the stage and generally looking like a retard.
Your app this week is considerably more serious, Duncan.
It's a very cool app, and a tip of the hat to Lars Reichert, the ex-CEO of CellC, who I saw tweeting about it earlier this week. It's called OpenSignal. It's an app. It's only available for Android at the moment, much to Lars's consternation in his tweet. OpenSignal, it's a really cool little app that really tells you everything about the networks that are around you, your Wi-Fi and your cellular networks. And it's really cool. It tells you, for example, where the signal is coming from. I'm not quite sure how it works, but it'll sort of point you in the direction of where your phone's stronger signal is coming from. It'll tell you things like the dB gain from your local cell tower. It'll actually show you where the cell tower is on a Google map, so you can see which tower you're connecting to. It also connects to your Wi-Fi and tells you the dB gain of your Wi-Fi. It's a really excellent little app, and if you go into the advanced section, it gives you awesome details. So if you're a bit of a networking geek, a wireless networking geek, then you definitely want to install OpenSignal. It's available in the Google Play Store.
Because alternatively, of course, if you're having terrible signal problems, I foresee a lot of emails to operators going, "Oi, tower number blah blah, yes, this location is not working properly.
That's fantastic.
Please
fix." It gives you precise pinpoints on a map showing you which tower it is that you're connected to, and also gives you the tower number, so you can really, really go armed to your network operator if you've got complaints. Anyway, check it out. It's OpenSignal. It's pretty cool, and we'll put the link to that and to GIFBoom on the post with this entry. Craig, anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Cool. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can mail us at info@techcentral.co.za, or you can leave a post under this article. Until next time, ciao. We'll be right back.